welcome.
Welcome to the Hanukkah 5767 issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you by OU Israel. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and it is, at least at the time of this recording, Thursday, December 21st. More importantly, it is the evening of the seventh candle, which corresponds to the first day of the month of Tevet. It is Rosh Chodesh, and it is Hanukkah. And it's Torah Tidbits Audio time. Okay, that was Chasidness, the album I played pieces of last week. This, of course, was Maoz Tzur. I know that the listeners do not sense the time delay here, but I received a phone call from Arut Sheva as I was recording these words, and I participated a little bit in the radiothon that they're having today to raise money, and I'm back at this recording now. Let's see if we could get down to our routine by saying Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shema V'koli Tihyena Aznecha Kashuvot L'kol Tachanunai. Im Avonot Tishmoria Adonai Miya Amod. Ki Imacha Haslicha L'ma'an Tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kivata nafshi velidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya. Ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotziyem, mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela l'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. I want to just share with you, rather than conceal it and try to cover it up, a different feeling in this recording. Usually, here in Israel, at 3 o'clock or so on Thursday afternoon, I try between 3 and 5 to record the 2 23-minute segments that combine with the news and commercials, etc., etc., to form the hour of Torah Tidbits Audio on Israel National Radio. And that's first aired in the live stream from 5 to 6 and then gets repeated periodically during Thursday night, Friday morning, or and further, and then it gets archived. Now I take those 2 23-minute segments and I put them together, and I often add more to it because the OU radio version of Torah Tidbits Audio does not restrict me to 23 plus 23 minutes. And today I'm not restricted for Israel National Radio either, since the live stream was preempted by the radiothon. And therefore, this show is being recorded for the archive at Arut Sheva, so that people starting, I don't know, an hour or two from now and onward will be able to listen to the show on the Israel National Radio website, and it will be sent also to OU Radio for the people who listen to Torah Tidbits audio there. With that said, the fact of the matter is, the secret, it's a little bit after 11 p.m. Israeli time. That means that people, let's say on the East Coast in New York, etc., etc., have not yet lit their seventh candle. People on the West Coast have even more hours till they get to light it. Most people in Israel not only have lit the seventh candle, meaning seven candles, but there's candles have gone out already a long time, and they're tucking themselves into bed and ready for a night's sleep. That's where it is holding now. So again, I say this is not the usual time that I record this show, and I'm feeling it. So I hope that I'll be able to get over that feeling and just do the show. I mentioned that it was Rosh Chodesh, just a little technical detail with that. I saw an email earlier from Roy, who is the president of the Israel New Moon Society, where each month members get an email reminding us when the moon might first be visible. I've said this many times in different contexts. The fact of the matter is that if we had a Sanhedrin today, we would continue sanctifying the new moon, the new month, by or based on eyewitness testimony to the first visibility of the lunar crescent. In our time, without a Sanhedrin, we have mathematical calculations that upon which the months are sanctified, and we have a fixed calendar, we call it. But the Israel New Moon Society is practicing observing the first visibility of the lunar crescent so that as soon as the Sanhedrin is restored and we return to that system of eyewitness testimony, there will be people experienced in doing it. It is not an easy thing to see the moon on its first night of visibility. Viewing conditions of the sky in the west have to be perfectly clear, which in most cities are not, and in the winter time with clouds they are not, and you need ideal conditions to see it for its first visibility. We announced last Shabbat that the Molad of Tevet was Wednesday morning. However, the actual Molad, the actual, quote, birth of the new moon, was yesterday, that's Wednesday, at a little bit after 4 p.m., 4 in the afternoon of Wednesday. That means Israel time. That means Wednesday night, which we already marked as the first of the 2 days of Rosh Chodesh of Tevet. The moon, of course, would not be visible. It takes many more hours than that before we're able to see it. 24 hours later brings us to today, this afternoon. Once the sun set at about a quarter to five, and you go a little bit more as it gets a little bit darker, then the moon would already be over 24 hours old and possibly visible under ideal viewing conditions. So if we had a Sanhedrin today, witnesses might show up Thursday evening, Thursday night to the Sanhedrin to testify that they saw the new moon, and early Friday morning, at which is our first day of Tevet, so it matches nicely this month, except it would be only the one day of Rosh Chodesh, which that's all there really is, although we celebrate 2 days, not going to get into that for the moment. Shortly after sunrise tomorrow morning, if witnesses would have come in the course of the night, the Sanhedrin, specifically the Nasi, the president of the Sanhedrin, would proclaim Friday as holy, as Rosh Chodesh, and then we would be able to number the current month of Tevet. All of this is practiced by the Israel New Moon Society, in the hopes that in the not-too-distant future, the Sanhedrin will be restored, and one of the practices which have which has fallen into disuse will be revived, and there will be people who know what they're doing, along with the eyewitnesses that now record their sightings of the new moon, are computer programs that predict the visibility of that moon. And one of the functions of the Israel New Moon Society is to check the computer predictions and see how close to reality they actually are. All of this information will serve us well with the new Sanhedrin. Almost enough said on that topic for now. Let's just add that the custom in Yerushalayim, known as Minhag Yerushalayim, which people around the world are free to follow as well, is that Kiddush Levana, the blessing outdoors in the presence of the moon at the beginning of the month until mid-month, is minimum 3 full days after the birth of the new moon. The birth of the new moon, as announced, was Wednesday morning. Thursday, Friday, Shabbat means 3 days. That means Motzoi Shabbat, Saturday night, is the first opportunity for Kiddush Levana. If people follow the custom of waiting 7 days after the full moon, after the new moon, so then we're talking a first opportunity next, this coming, rather, Wednesday night. And either one, Kiddush Levana, as I've spoken of in the past, is a very special and a very important mitzvah among many, many special and important mitzvot. But we'll leave it at that. Oh, that was, of course, Achenu, which we said following Psalm 130. I want to tell you the extra reason why I played the song. We always say it every show for a number of years already, Psalm 130 and Achenu. Once in a while, I also put on one of the various songs of Achenu. And why specifically here, there's a feeling I would like to convey here. Pre-Chanukah, Achenu was the prayer. What do I mean by that? Imagine yourselves in a situation of Jews living in the land of Israel, subjugated to the Greek-Syrian government, being forced to cease practicing Judaism, cease learning Torah, and the few who tenaciously clung to Judaism's practices had to go into the deepest of hiding in order to hope to do these mitzvot and to learn Torah. The average Jew said, too dangerous, and he gave it up. And other Jews were glad to give it up. Maybe here's something to comment on, because it's once upon a time and it's today as well. There were Jews who tenaciously clung to the religion at most dangerous times through history. There were Jews, which I would say were in the majority, who reluctantly, temporarily gave it up. There were those minority, although sizable at times, unfortunately, who were thrilled to give it up, who bought the traditional Greek line of time to modernize, and just translate that to our own time, and you have the forces of assimilation, which Greece represents, where things are a lot more subtle than being threatened under pain of death to prohibit circumcision and Sabbath observance and kashrut and everything else, and Torah learning. So you don't have that, but you do have the attraction of the different modern, with it, cultures that tear the Jew away from his religion and attempt to present him with something more appealing, more universal. And the Jew, throughout history, has said to those influences, no. Of course, not all Jews have said no successfully. Some have succumbed. But the Jew, the traditional, classic, eternal Jew, of which many of us are proud to be part of, were the ones who would not give in to these temptations and these attempts at tearing us away from traditional Judaism. And that's what Chanukah represents, the victory over those forces and the ability to revive the practice and study of Judaism so that it truly is eternal. But the pre-Chanukah situation, Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael, our brothers, all of the house of Israel, wherever they be, who are in dire straits, may you come, may you emerge, or may God help you out from darkness to light. Ding, 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 there's your Chanukah. Because Chanukah represents the light after the darkness which is associated with Greece, the light of the Chanukiah, the light of the menorah rather, the light of the Chashmonaim, restoring that light of Judaism, which went through a period of darkness. But during the Chanukah time and its aftermath, there were good times, but there were heavy bad times as well. And don't forget that a couple of hundred years later, the Beit HaMikdash, the temple, was destroyed again. And we are suffering from almost 2,000 years of exile from that destruction. So, once again, we've got Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael Hanatunim Batzara Uvashivya, and we still, even though we are celebrating the light of Hanukkah, we still ask God to take us and all Jews in perilous situations out from slavery to freedom, out from times of trouble to good times, out from the darkness to the light. The Hanukkah light is a symbol, but it's an ongoing prayer and an ongoing process. That's what I wanted to say about Achenu.
Malel gurot Yisrael otan mi yimne hem bechodor yakum agibot goel ha'am mi yemalel gurot Yisrael otan mi yimne hem bechodor yakum agibot goel ha'am shma bayam Magabi Moshiahu Chode Umiyamenu Kol Am Yisrael Yitahed Yakum Beyigael Umiyamenu Kol Am Yisrael Yitahed Yakum
Malel, famous Hanukkah song, but a little bit of controversy about it, or at least it raises an issue of the singing of praise of the Maccabees and of Israel, or the singing of praises of God. I think perceptive people who have their heads screwed on correctly realize that we're talking about a partnership between human effort and divine help. And I think the symbol of the miracle of the oil and the mitzvah of lighting the lights each night represents the divine help. And divine, I don't know if you want to use the word help, comes in two forms. It's help when we expend an effort, and the help comes in bringing us towards success. And contrasting that with the divine doing when we are not capable of doing anything for ourselves. And our experience is made up of both of those kind of things. In other words, this opens up a larger topic. And it actually relates a little bit to the weekly portion, because we have the story of Yosef in prison at the very end of last week's Parsha of Vayeshev. He had successfully interpreted the dream for the wine steward and asked the wine steward to put in a good word for him with Paro and get him out of the pit. And basically the topic that comes up is what's known in sort of Yiddishized Hebrew as hishtadlus, which means effort, and of course emuna, belief and trust in God. So whenever there's a situation of danger, we are duty-bound to do whatever we're capable of doing to help ourselves. And at the same time, we pray that God will allow us to succeed, will help us to succeed, and especially, maybe not especially, and also to do the whole thing in situations and in parts of those situations where we're not capable at all of doing anything. Let's look at the Hanukkah story again. The requirement, so to speak, was that individuals, family, band together, form a makeshift army, and fight for freedom. The victory was there. If we speak of that victory being Rabim Ba'ad Ma'atim, the many in the hands of the few, and Giborim Biad Chalashim, strong people fell into the hands of the weak, then we, in essence, are acknowledging, and especially if you look at the way the prayer is set up for Al Hanisim, for every Amidah and every Birkat HaMazon, it's acknowledging God for the miracles that he performed that allowed the Maccabim, the Hashmonaim, to prevail. But it was with our blood and sweat and tears and effort. That's a good partnership. Then the Hashmonaim went into the temple to clean it up, and they again expended effort, and there was hishtadlus. But that has a limit. When you search for oil and all you find is a one-day supply of oil, then you've got a problem here, because no amount of human effort can make the one-day supply last for the 8 days that they needed it to last. The only thing they're able to do is travel, find olive trees, pick the olives, squeeze the olives, produce the oil, bring it back to the temple, and light. There is your hishtadlus. But that a one-day supply should miraculously last continuously for 8 days, that is the second kind of miracle, the kind that does not involve human effort, because we can't do that, and only God can, and he did it. So that we are really celebrating both levels of miracle, and there is a tendency on part of some cynics to sing the praise of the Maccabean army, just like they sang the praise of IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, for the brilliant victory of the Six-Day War. And again, I say people with the right perception saw the hand of God in that war and realized that it was a perfect example of hishtadlus, effort, extreme effort on the part of the Jewish people, and it was met by siyata dishmaya, help from heaven, in the form of a stunning victory during the Six-Day War. That's the Hanukkah story again. That's what we're celebrating. I'm going to play a song now. It's not a Hanukkah song, but it is a Hanukkah song, because it's a Shabbat song. Now, we got Shabbos Hanukkah coming up, but more importantly, Hanukkah, the happening, the event of the first Hanukkah, basically allowed us to keep Shabbat. Shabbat was one of the items on the hit list of the Greeks, and it was banned. And the victory of Chanukah is not just the ability to light candles each night of the eight nights. It's the ability to keep Shabbat and to sing about Shabbat every single week, week in and week out. And therefore, I am taking one of my favorite Zmirot, Baruch Kel Elyon, and this particular rendition of it, and using it to salute the Chashmonaim, the Maccabees, and the whole Chanukah story. And maybe what I'm doing in musical form now is similar to an idea that I actually don't remember who I read it in whose name it was. But it's the idea that every night of Chanukah, right after you light the candles, you should learn Torah, especially with your family. Why? It's always nice to learn Torah, but that's not the reason. The reason is the candles symbolize the ability to learn Torah and learn Torah with your family without fear, and therefore it behooves us to do it. Similarly, if Chanukah represents the freedom of the Jewish people to be able to keep Shabbat, then it behooves us to keep Shabbat. And this is my message to some of the Jews who are listening to this show, who maybe don't keep Shabbat, or don't keep it completely. Let Chanukah inspire you, not just to sing Ma'oz Tzur, and to sing other songs for Chanukah, and to light the Chanukiah, but let it inspire you to learn Torah, and to practice mitzvot. And therefore, with this long introduction, one of the Zmirot of Shabbat, which of course includes the two Shabbatot Chanukah, and especially because Chanukah gave us the ability to keep Shabbat. Baruch Kel Elyon.
Yeah. shomer shabbos kados mechaloi einach shalchimas koidesh goyraloi vim yotzochoi vazayoim Keiladoi milchoi lenoi milchoi shlucho Ashoi mer shabos habeirim abas Lo keil yeirot yuki milcho al
Listening to the refrain of that Zmira, I realize that it's particularly appropriate for Hanukkah in light of what I said last week and what I've been saying repeatedly over the course of Hanukkah, and that's the Hashomer Shabbat Habein Im Habat, the ability not only to do mitzvot, but to do it with your son and your daughter, meaning family, meaning that even in the best of the scenarios, when people were able to perform mitzvot in secret and in hiding, I've said this already, they had to keep it from public, and they even had to keep it from their families, because it was a dangerous kind of thing. So the concept of Hashomer Shabbat Habein Im Habat fits with the celebration that Hanukkah is. It's getting close to half an hour after midnight already, so I would like to wrap things up maybe a little bit on the early side for the show. But let's finish off with the idea of eight. We spoke about it a little bit last week in a different context, but there is a famous question, a little miracle arithmetic it would be called, where, as the story goes, a one-day supply of oil miraculously lasted 8 days. That means there were 7 days of miracle. How come our sages instituted the celebration of an 8-day holiday for Hanukkah? It's a question that's been asked and answered many, many times. I have a book called Ner Lemeah, which has 100 different answers that span many centuries of answers. And among the favorite answers are the ones who try to explain why the existing answers were not satisfactory, and they come up with a better answer. And there are all kind of ideas behind it. The bottom line, I believe, is that 8 was not chosen purely based on the story of a one-day supply of oil miraculously lasting for 8 days, but it was intended to make a statement. One of the statements was about Brit Milah, that is also associated with the 8 days, the circumcision, which was not only a cause celebre where the Greeks singled that mitzvah out and banned it from our practice, and we defiantly continued to observe the mitzvah of circumcision, but circumcision represents entering into the covenant of Abraham. It was almost an isolation kind of, I don't know if that's the right word. What I'm trying to say is that up till the command of circumcision, the people of the world all had the same status of human beings. And with this covenant of Abraham, which was confirmed at Sinai as the covenant with the Jewish people and the giving of the Torah, then we make the unpopular in the eyes of the people of the world position that the Jewish people have a commitment that goes above and beyond that which is deemed required of all people. And the assimilationist forces in the world, as symbolized by the Greeks of the Hanukkah story, are based on become like everybody else. Of course, the everybody else should be us, because we are the greatest culture in the world, but it's still don't be different. The Purim story has a similar, although different, flavor to it, with Haman saying to Ahasuerus, there's this nation scattered among your provinces, and they dance to a different drummer, however the expression is. They're different. And that rubs some people the wrong way. So our sages, in choosing 8 days, aside from the length of time that the miracle was manifest, are making the statement, using the 8 as the flag, using Brit Milah as the front and center symbol of the Jews' type of commitment. Avraham Avinu, Abraham, was not just told to be circumcised, to circumcise himself. He was told by God, Hitalech Lefanai V'hayeh Tamim, walk before me and be whole, be complete. And that's what 8 symbolizes, and that's what Hanukkah symbolizes. On a totally different way of looking at that same question of how come 8 and not just 7, there's another approach with which I like and I wanted to share, and that is true. There is 7 days of miracle that a one-day supply of oil can burn for 8 days, but we should not forget or lose sight of the miracle of nature that a one-day supply of oil burns for 1 day. In other words, a person will hear what I just said and say, so what's miraculous about that? The answer is, take a lemon or any other fruit besides an olive, squeeze it, stick a wick in its juice, and try lighting it and see if it burns with a beautiful, useful, beneficial flame. It doesn't. Oil does, and it's one of the miracles of nature, the miracles that we take for granted, that only the outstanding kind of miracle of it lasting for considerably longer than it should have by nature, and we say, oh, a great miracle happened here. But don't forget the everyday miracles are no less miraculous, maybe even more miraculous, and they are to be celebrated also. Hence the 7 days of the open miracle following the celebration or concurrent with the celebration of the miracle of nature. Many, many other things to say about it. Let me just end with wishes for a Chodesh Tov, a Chanukah Sameach, a Shabbat Shalom. And just as we are reminded by the Torah reading of Chanukah, of the dedication of the temporary sanctuary called the Mishkan, the Tabernacles, by Moshe in the desert. And just like the Haftorah this week talks about the first temple of Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech and his Beit HaMikdash, and last week's Haftorah spoke of the second Beit HaMikdash, and Chanukah itself is about the rededication of the second Beit HaMikdash, that the ultimate goal and hope and prayer of the Jewish people is the building of the third Beit HaMikdash speedily in our time. So with wishes on prayer for the Geula Shlema, I finish only with the Mishtameach. Lechanate,